Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Colorado Christmas Survival by Kate Nolan. A relentless pursuit through the mountains as a dangerous snowstorm races in. When armed gunmen descend on Hope Prescott's office a few days before Christmas, she and her young daughter flee straight into the harsh Colorado mountains. With no idea why they're being targeted, Hope relies on the help of rancher and veteran Ian Frazier to protect them from the assailants and the deadly blizzard blowing in. Somehow, Hope and Ian must determine what has put her in the killer's crosshairs. But can they take down the criminals before the next attack proves fatal?
On this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense, I'm delighted to welcome Kate Nolan to my show. She's got that suspense writer gene that sees danger in her story and everyday occurrences. So welcome to my show, Kate.
Thank you for having me, Sarah.
Well, I'm so excited to talk about, I'm always excited to talk with fellow suspense authors. And one of my favorite questions to ask, because this is something I think that I know I struggle with as my schedule may change from the summer to the school year to the whatever. When do you find time to write? How do you fit that into your daily life?
Well, as you said, it changes a lot over time, and it certainly has changed over my life. When my children were little, it's a lot different than it is now that they're grown. Mainly it's dictated by the fact that I work full-time as a junior high ELA teacher. So I have to do a lot of writing in the summer, but then when I'm on deadline, I hold myself to a strict 1,000 words a day, either before or after school, so I don't lose my momentum. And I also jot down ideas that come to me in the shower, that come to me when I'm driving, anywhere. I just always am jotting things down because I find it easier to start a new scene if I already have all those little notes and snippets of dialogue or action. Because procrastinating is really the biggest problem more than time.
Yeah, yes, I know. We all, especially when you have that deadline, we all just go like, oh, well, what can I do? Organize my sock drawer or start another little laundry or squirrel. I feel like we're like looking at it. Oh, let's go look over there. No, there. No, no. Yeah.
I'll take the dog for a walk.
Yes, something other than writing. So what got you into this genre as an author? Why did you start writing romantic suspense?
Well, it's sort of a twisted reason. I was writing a novel that had been requested by Harlequin, but then they announced the Killer Voices contest in 2014, and I had an idea for an opening scene, and that's all you needed for round one. So I wrote it down and I submitted it, and Emily Rodmell was hooked by my idea and I was hooked on suspense. I'd grown up reading it, so it just felt natural once I started.
So did you ever finish that other novel, the non-suspense one?
Yeah. That one was also for Emily, so she decided she wanted me to just stick with suspense.
Yes. So we talked about what we try to do when we don't want to write. So what do you need, what's your go-to when you need that pick-me-up to keep writing? What do you do?
The real answer to that is my playlist, because one of the first things I do when I start a new book is to find the music I need that connects me with the characters and the story. And sometimes it's really easy, and other times it takes a lot of searching. Like for the book I'm working on now, I just really wasn't getting anything. And then I happened to see something on Instagram that was Rewrite the Stars from The Greatest Showman. And so I went and listened to the full, I was like, that's it. And so I built my playlist around that because it just, I mean, for someone else, it probably wouldn't make sense why it connected. but it took all the pieces in my brain and put them together. So for my July book, it was Sidewalk Prophets, You Love Me Anyway, or I Believe It Now. Those were a couple. And honestly, for the book that's coming out, well, came out in December, was Carrie Underwood singing Jesus Take the Wheel, because I was picturing an opening scene in a blizzard.
Ah, yeah. Yeah.
So once I start playing that playlist, then I know that I'm okay and I'm right in the story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I find music kind of distracting, so I tend not to listen to anything when I'm writing.
I know a lot of people say that. I just don't even hear the lyrics after a while. It's just the minute that opening note hits, it's sort of the trigger that gets me into the story.
No, I think that's fabulous. I think that's fabulous. Yeah, if I'm really stuck, I'll go take a walk. I'll go sit on my front porch or my back porch, depending on the weather, for a few minutes, just kind of like not think about anything. Usually set my phone timer on my phone for like 10 minutes, and that really helps me get back into what I need to get back into. But yeah, I know a playlist are a lot of people really love them and they use them, and that's great.
You actually made me think of something else, and that's, I hate to say it, a shower, because running or even doing the dishes, running water just starts my ideas going.
Yes, yeah. What is it about washing the dishes? I don't do it as often as I used to because I have kids who, that's their chore. But, yeah, washing dishes can be just really kind of mindless, and that can be a good thing for a writer when you're stuck on something or if the words aren't coming. So what was it? I mean, you talked a little bit about how you got into writing romantic suspense, but why do you like writing romantic suspense?
You know, when I was first reading, well, the first books I remember reading were The Happy Hollisters, which is about a family of five children, right, who solve mysteries. And I feel like everything I read after that was all mysteries. Nancy Drew, Hardy Boys, Trixie Belden. And then I grew up and discovered Phyllis Whitney and Victoria Hulk. And it's just that something extra in the story, the mystery element or the suspense element, that I just feel like it's easier for my brain to wrap around that as the driving force in the story. And then I guess you could say I've got a devious mind, but I just love having the combination of the romance and the suspense.
Oh, I love it. Now, you mentioned The Happy Hollisters, and it made my heart just glad, Kate, because hardly anyone has read those books. I love those as a kid. They were my older siblings' books, and I just loved them. My kids loved them. I can't get rid of them. They're like sitting on my shelf. I'm like, I can't. I just have to keep them.
I know,
they're
mine are on
the
shelf
anymore.
Too.
Yeah.
And you know who I connected with over those? Mary Keneally also reads them.
Oh,
read them
that's great. Yeah, and then I found someone at my church who had some as well. Like her kids had written. Her kids are younger than me, but she had read them and gave them to her. And so my kids were able to read like books that I had never read because I couldn't find them. They didn't have them. So it was really kind of fun. But those are fun stories. I love those. Those are really great.
But I guess you could say they gave me my start.
Yes, I know. I read those and all the ones you mentioned. I'm like, yes, yes, all of those wonderful books. Ah, so many books. So little time. Yes. So what do you feel is the hardest part of writing romantic suspense?
Finding new ways to make danger scenes. I mean, how many car chases or gunfights can you have, right? And especially if it's set in wilderness, it's like, okay, I've got another animal. Well, I made one really tragic mistake with my second book. I had a half page with like a 2-sentence mention of a snake, and they put that on the cover, and it still haunts me to this day because so many people reacted so strongly to it. So I try not to put animals in my story anymore unless they're like friendly dogs or reindeer.
But that's funny.
Yeah, apparently they were doing an experiment with different animals on the cover, and they decided the snake failed.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're like, oh man, yeah. Sometimes you just don't, right. You just don't know.
Right. So,
now you talked a little bit about, so you mentioned some of your books are set in Colorado. So how do you pick the location? Did you choose Colorado? Did someone mention it? How did that come along for at least this series that you're currently working on?
For that series, it was because I was doing research for my first book in the series that was about a veteran with PTSD, and I had learned about a program in Colorado called Huts for Vets that took veterans out into nature, into the wilderness, to let them find peace and reconnect with their inner selves. And I was so impressed with that program, and it was similar to what I was trying to create in the book. So I just knew the Colorado Rocky Mountains had to be the place for it.
Yeah, that's great. So do you have a favorite of your books?
Well, the favorite, it's like asking your favorite children, right?
Yeah, it is.
And they're all my favorite at one point or another, but my favorite right now is actually a book I just turned into Guidepost. It's not coming out until this time in 2025, well, November 2025, because I got to indulge all my 10-year-old horse-loving self in writing that one, because it's about a mystery about a missing horse.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's a little bit different than my regular suspense, but I had so much fun writing it.
Yes, I know. It's hard. It is hard to choose your favorite. I'm like, I like this about this book, and this one I liked about that book, and then.
I know. I mean, I could give you a reason for why I love every one of them, but that's why I wrote them, right?
Yeah.
The only one I don't like is the one I'm generally usually writing right at the moment that's giving me problems.
Yeah. Right. That's because it's not coming together as I think I like to fool myself in thinking that. I mean, some books are a little easier to write than others, but almost every book has something in it that just, like, makes us pull our hair out and go, what am I thinking? I'm not a writer. I'm a...
Right, the imposter syndrome.
Yeah, visits all of us all the time when we're writing. Yes, true. So what does your family think about your writing romantic suspense?
Well, we're a family of readers, so most of the time they're just happy to see me have books published. But my daughters have said every once in a while they find it a little creepy that their mother comes up with these ideas.
Yeah.
But one day I was walking the dog with my older daughter, and I saw something by the side of the road. I said, oh, that gives me an idea for a story. And I started to talk about it, and she looked at me. She said, what doesn't give you an idea for a story?
That is so true, Kate. I mean, a lot of things can give you ideas. Yeah, my boys are teenagers now, and one is 6'1", and the other is 6'2". And so whenever I need to, and of course I'm like 5'5", so whenever I need to see how a tall person would be, I'm like, come here, stand here, let me see. Okay, just let me push you around for a minute.
What a great bonus for having children.
I know, exactly. Like, let me just see, how is this work? Okay, thank you. Because sometimes it's hard to visualize, especially if it's like a fight scene or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, how, it's hard for me. I am not a really good gauge of that kind of thing. Just in my brain, sometimes I need to kind of see it to gauge what that space, how a person may move in that space. So yeah, so they've indulged their mother with that. So
that's wonderful.
Yeah.
My daughters have been really helpful as proofreaders because I am a mess with commas and quotation marks. So they go through my books and fix them all. Because I'm caught up in the writing of it, and I'm not focusing on the quotation marks.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. They're really great for stuff like that. Well, it has been a pleasure talking with you, Kate. So thank you so much for being on my show today.
Oh, thank you for having me, Sarah. It's been fun to chat with you also.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. My guest has been Kate Nolan, who writes, obviously, Romantic Suspense. And you can stay tuned for an excerpt for one of her recent books.
Now an excerpt from Colorado Christmas Survival by Kate Nolan. Knock, knock. Hope Prescott looked up from her computer, smiled, and called to her daughter, who was curled up on her office chair, face buried in a book. Hey, Emmy, look who's here. Emmy kept her eyes glued to the page until Hope prompted her again. Earth to Emmy, you have a visitor. Emmy glanced up and her whole face transformed. Uncle Steve! The book went flying as she leaped from the cozy corner chair. Hey there, sweet girl. Steve scooped the 7-year-old blonde bookworm into his arms as if she weighed nothing. He turned to Hope. Why are you still here? I told you to take the afternoon off. And I told you I had a marketing campaign that needed finishing touches. It can wait till after Christmas. Go. The rest of the gang left hours ago. Hope rolled her eyes. If you make me leave, I'll only take it home with me. Not this time. Steve pulled an envelope from his back pocket and handed it to Emmy. The little girl opened the envelope and gasped. Christmas Village? You got us tickets? Hope ground her teeth and glared at her boss. He might be her best friend in the world, but he had no right getting her child's hopes up over something impossible. No room at the inn, she muttered. Steve laughed and whispered into Emmy's ear. Hope's heart sank at the way her daughter's eyes lit up. She would have given anything to bring some Christmas joy into Emmy's life. But by the time her daughter had discovered the best Christmas celebration in all of Colorado, everyone else in the state had snatched up the tickets along with every room in the small mountain town. Uncle Steve's friend has a ski chalet we can stay in. It's ours for... Emmy looked at Steve, who whispered in her ear again. Her eyes grew round. 2 weeks! We get 2 weeks at Christmas Village! Hope opened her mouth to protest, but Steve shook his head. I won't hear another word about it. Emmy deserves a special Christmas, and who better to provide it than her favorite uncle? Does that mean you're coming with us? A shadow passed over his dear face, confirming the feeling that had been nagging at Hope lately. Steve was keeping something from her. Whatever it was, he shrugged it off. Not this time. You need to get going before the storm blows in. Leave the computer here, pack up your stuff. I want you on your way in, he glanced down at his watch. 15 minutes. There was no missing the underlying tension in his voice this time. Why was he so anxious for her to be gone? Steve, what's wrong? He gave Emmy a kiss, then set her down and stepped into the doorway. We'll talk about it when you get back. No worries. Just go give your daughter the Christmas she needs. And if you really have to work, you can play along with 12 days till Christmas. Hope stared at him as he disappeared into the hallway. Playing on their social media platform was not work. Her job was getting other people to play. As Steve's footsteps receded down the hallway, Hope begrudgingly powered down her computer. He was right. She needed to set aside her work and focus on her daughter. Emmy's childhood had been derailed by her father's death. And as much as Hope didn't want to think about her deceased husband and his betrayal, she couldn't deny the hole it had left in her daughter's life. So, she would shirk her workaholic ways and concentrate on Emmy and Christmas. A piercing alarm shattered the air, cutting off her thoughts. Her phone dinged and she grabbed it. Intruder alert. Exit code 8. Hope's heart raced. Code 8 meant extreme danger and they were supposed to use the secret exit Steve had designed. But where was he? If they were alone in the building, she couldn't leave without him. Except she was supposed to. That was what they'd practiced. She dashed across the room and peered down the hall. There was no sign of Steve, but in the distance she could hear the sound of running footsteps followed by a gunshot. And then silence. She slammed the door and engaged the safety latch. Mommy? The look of terror etched on her daughter's face galvanized Hope. Steve had been paranoid about a workplace attack. He had made them practice escapes until the steps were drilled into their minds. She'd never expected to need to use them, but she knew what to do. Get our coats and backpacks. Her heart pounding, Hope pressed the panic button under her desk, which would ring at the sheriff's office. That was the fastest way to get help, though she hoped law enforcement had gotten the same alert she had. She shrugged on her coat, took the backpacks from Emmy, and grasped her hand before heading into a back passage that would open into the parking lot. As she and Emmy raced down the empty passageway, Hope's thoughts strayed to Steve and she whispered prayers for his safety. She listened for sirens and prayed law enforcement would get here fast, But as more gunshots echoed in the hallway, terror seized her heart, and she feared it wouldn't be soon enough. Hope punched in a special code that would deactivate the alarm on the door and eased it open. Snow was falling steadily as she poked her head out and looked around the quiet garden. All was peaceful and still back here, but her car was parked on the other side of the building, the side where all the shooting was coming from. What should she do? She could try running away to wait for rescue, but Steve had built his tech complex in the middle of nowhere. With the storm blowing in, they risked death by exposure. She glanced down at Emmy, who was huddling inside her coat, her bright pink coat. If anyone came looking for them, she'd stand out like a neon sign. Whipping off her own coat, Hope wrapped it around her daughter. She really had no choice but to try to get to her car.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.